Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another, and don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation, but then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano, and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof, while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof, massaging leather-appointed seats are available features.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAY2WIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan.
And I'm doing the best at this.
Today we're talking about a tournament. We had a tournament recently.
Yeah, we did. We had our, was this the seventh tournament that
this
we've done at Cloud City?
One. Oh, and real quick, I know you're going to talk about stuff. I'm interjecting both of you. We have a playmat this time. Look at it.
That's awesome. Boom. Yeah.
Whoa.
This was done by Gold Sabertooth. It features the winners of the 2024 tournaments that we did and a lot of the decks that were featured there too.
Yeah, so we have Max, Tyler's on
That's
there.
Me.
Yeah, we have both Nadu and Magda because those both won. And then Tyler won with Kinnan, so Kinnan's on there. And then our last pod, the finals pod never finished because there was a fire in the mall. So those commanders that were in that pod are still they're still here. Finishing out their pod, and everything's obviously on fire.
Was there a fire this time that prevented the finals?
No.
We'll find out. But yeah, so this was our seventh one, so we're going to go through all of the rounds that we played, and we're going to talk about things that we just think about tournament CEDH as we get to them.
That sounds great. Who wants to go first?
Tyler normally starts.
Tyler, start us off.
Oh, shit. What decks are we playing?
Let's go over, I guess. Timna Thrasios.
Krark Timna, not Kinnan.
Not
even the same color. None of the same colors.
Complete opposite of those colors.
Kind of the opposite of Kinnan.
Right? That was the purpose?
Yeah, honestly. So I was playing Jessica Timna a little bit before the bans, and then that deck began to be a lot less good after the bans. But I like having a Mardu deck in addition to Kinnan because A, it's kind of good for me as a player to like be doing a different playstyle, and B, like, a long time ago now, I kind of picked up a lot of the CEDH staples when they were still not that expensive in all of the colors, and then I started playing only Kinnan, so I just have like an Imp Seal and like all that shit just like rotting away in a box, and I was like, I gotta just build a Mardu deck, and that's kind of why, honestly.
Yeah, nice. The deck seems sweet so far. Like, it's been really good.
It is cool.
As of listening to the podcast right now, I think it's been on the channel twice. You lost one and you won one, but your loss was very... It was kind of a strange loss, and I feel like you've been winning a lot with the deck.
I've been doing pretty well with the deck. I would say the win rate is close to my win rate with Kinnan, if not maybe even a little better recently. And I think a lot of that is it's a weird deck that people don't know what it's doing. A lot of that is also it's able to be very explosive with silence effects and all the stuff that White gives you access to, which is interesting. It's not the Mad Farm list. So if you've seen Krark Timna before, that I think there's like one that's kind of like very similar to like a Mardu Mad Farm type list. And it's not that. I brewed this from scratch with Tyler. We call him Tivit Tyler because it's hilarious because he doesn't ever play Tivit anymore.
He's
mostly a Krark Sakashima player. Yeah, a local player who really knows Krark from Krark Sakashima. So he and I brewed this together, and I've made a couple changes since then, but not many. And I think the list has been really strong.
Yeah, the one thing that I want to mention about the deck before we get too much into our tournaments is that I think it's really cool because it's like Krark Sakashima, where you get that doubling crazy effect with Krark Sakashima, but the way you often play it out is you often play the doubler effects before you play the Krark. So you'll play the Delny, or you'll play the Bergy, or you'll play the Stormkilling Artist or whatever before you play the Krark a lot of times, or at least you have the ability to, so that you don't get quite as easily blown out. Someone casts a Sakashima with the Krark right there, and you destroy the Krark. A lot of times that can be a situation when you get blown out, or it's a little bit backwards, whereas this you do it in the reverse order, so you get to play Krark only when you need Krark to be doing Krark stuff, right?
Well, I think Krark has just been growing in popularity a lot more too, because Krark Silas is something else that people have been raving about quite a lot more, and I think it's because we've gotten a lot more cards that double Krarks without you needing Sakashima.
Yeah.
So like the Harmonic Prodigies and being able to Twin Flame Harmonic Prodigies, and the Silas versions get to play Vryn as well, which also just doubles your Krark triggers as well. Roaming Throne's another one of these cards, so like there's just been an overabundance of things that Krark gets to make sure that you're not flipping tails on Krark all the time.
I've been telling Dylan he should pick up Krark Silas.
I do love Grixis.
Grixis.
So how was your first round, Tyler?
It was good. Well, one more thing I want to say about Ryzen Krark. This is bad for tournaments. we'll end up talking about this a little more, I'm sure, but Krark turns can take a very long time, and I perceive this as being a similar problem to Nadu, where I would complain a lot about Nadu's turn equity. Like, how much of the 80 minutes that you have in a round does that player get to take? And Quark has this problem where I think it can take very long turns where you're legitimately executing actions at a reasonable speed, and it just takes a long time. And I think this is a problem that we haven't solved yet and should be having an honest discussion about. So if you have the like magic solution to figure out how to do this without it ruining every other player's day, put it in the comments. Otherwise, I don't know what we're going to do.
This is not a new issue, because when Ken Bauman won Tier 1 Con a couple years ago with Quark Sakashima, everyone complained that it takes so long for Quark Sakashima to do something, and it was something that people had been advocating for a long time as well. And the counter argument's always, well, okay, well, if you take like a big ad nause turn, aren't you also always like doing the same thing? So like in 2.5 years since then, we've still never found a solution for it, because either Quark is just not the best deck in the format, or...
Or it is.
It's certainly rising right now. So the more popular it is, the more that we would start to see it. So I can understand that being an issue. But this is also not the first card that we're going to talk about today that I think I would advocate for a need for change in tournament CEDH moving forward, because there's a couple things that I think could make tournament CEDH significantly more enjoyable.
Okay.
Not to say that I'm not enjoying TEDH, but the whole 3-hour games, 3.5-hour games thing, one player taking like 45 minutes alone on their turn thing, I can understand that that's something that's not an enjoyable experience for all players.
Yeah, a lot of draws, a lot of things, games going over, and then not after the game goes over, we just kind of like let the game still finish out if it's on that last player's turn. So if time is drawn on a Quark's player's turn, they can still take an hour's worth of game actions, even if they're a great pilot.
Especially because it's not known that they can win, right? Like, it's, what's that called, Tyler?
It's non-deterministic.
Oh, thank you, Dylan. I'm sorry. I should have had faith in you, too.
So that's the deck. That's Quark. We should get into some of the rounds before we get talking some more of the tournament stuff. Yeah, so let's hear about your first round, Tyler.
So my first round, I was in seat one on Tim McQuark, you know, TNK, as they call it.
The most popular TNK.
Yeah, the most popular, well-known TNK. We had Kai in seat two on Glarb, and Adam on Najeela, and Ryan on Magda. The early game was pretty slow. The first Magda that got played got removed. I was hitting with Timna and like doing the like Timna game plan first, which is often how this deck operates for me, and my Timna draws just sucked. I drew a lot of cards, and I just did not get the gas I was needing. Glarb was super mana constrained the entire time and just didn't do a ton until they untapped for a turn, cast a Summoner's Pact that they wouldn't be able to pay for in order to get an Elvish Spirit Guide in order to cast a Culling Ritual that would have been able to convert into a win if the Culling Ritual hadn't been countered. That was a cool play.
Oh, interesting. That was a really cool play.
So awesome job, Kai, thinking through the like go get Elvish Spirit Guide with Summoner's Pact. That's wild. But it did get stopped by Adam on Gila, had counter magic for that. I pushed hard that turn cycle, but I ate two counter spells, including a Pact of Negation from Kai, who was already dead to his Summoner's Pact. So that felt bad, but I don't think I see that as spite play, because like it is increasing his odds for a draw, and I don't think there was someone who was obviously going to win right after me if he pacted that.
That's kind of like the first big difference I want to real quick mention between like CDH and TDH, or like Tournament Commander. The main difference is right there, whereas in like actual CDH, I don't think you pack there. Like you're not winning the game, you're going to lose. But in TDH, there's a clock, there's a timer, it's different, and a draw is 1 point, not zero. So if you don't finish the game, if the time runs out and he's still alive, then that means that we got a draw, and that's like you're playing to win the tournament. It feels like a spite play, but in TDH, it's really not.
Yeah, I would never do that for a game on the channel, but I would always do that in a tournament if it's going to get me farther in the tournament.
Yeah, has a
what
chance
to. What is a spite play is different.
Yeah, it's a completely different thing. Sorry to interrupt.
But I still didn't like it.
Yeah, but it still stinks.
Even with the two pieces of counter magic that I ate that turn, if I had won enough flips, I might have been able to get through it, but I couldn't. Adam on Gila then cast a Culling Ritual, which like reset the board. And
second Culling Ritual of the game?
The first one that resolved.
The first one that resolved, though. Okay.
And that obviously set Magda back too. On my turn that cycle, I tried to grasp for a Breach, which would have let me really go off, but the Breach was in hand.
Oh.
So I searched Adam's deck and couldn't do the Breach.
Did he tell you that, or did you just, I guess you looked through the deck?
I looked through the deck and I was like, do you run Breach? And he was like, yep. I was like,
oh shit.
Oh, fuck. And yeah, that turn cycle, Magda got it after being able to command beacon Magda to make it cheaper, and had PFB out that survives a Culling Ritual.
Professional
Facebreaker, yeah.
Magda had that out.
Yep, and then the new Artifact Dwarf vehicle was top decked to clinch it that turn.
Oh, nice. So that's a new card, won a game in CDH. Confirmed, the card's good.
So that was my first loss.
First
Not
loss
great,
of the day.
We are 0-1. What about you guys?
Do you want to go next?
Sure, yeah, okay. I'll go next. So I was going fourth. I was up against Malcolm Vile Smasher Magda Redshift.
Yeah.
That's the new red-green goblin dude from Aetherdrift that we didn't talk about on the show. But it basically, for 12 mana, lets you put any number of permanents from your hand into play. I didn't really get to see it officially go off. I got a Seedborn Muse down this game, but Magda had a bunch of stacks like Dampening Sphere in play. There was also a Disruptor Flute.
What does that card do?
That's the one. It's a 2-mana artifact with flash, and when it enters, you name a card. That card costs 3 more to cast, and its activated abilities can't be activated.
Okay.
It's really good against Wishclaw Talisman when we know that a Wishclaw Talisman is going to find a Glinthorn Buccaneer for the Magda Vile Smasher player to try to win with their creature combo, and we know that Magda is the only way that we're staying alive.
Malcolm Vile Smasher.
What did I say? Magda Vile Smasher? That deck sucks.
We know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that's what... Disrupting Flute is what Pithing Needle evolves into. It becomes more mana, has slightly more text.
Understood.
You know, and it's stats increase.
It's the stage one. Yeah, okay.
And then Magda also had a hearse down from turn one, and I kept my hand based on the ability to win the game eventually with Devoted Druid and Hazel's Brewmaster, which really was a huge bummer. So like, I spent a lot of the time trying to draw a bunch of cards to try to find a new win condition for this pod, because I knew I wasn't going to get through anything, and Dampening Sphere kept making things worse. And I had a turn where I thought I could go for it, but my Mana Vault stays tapped going into my turn with Seedborn Muse, so that was me miscounting. So I was unable to have enough time to get another turn for me to put a different win on. And at that point, we just ended up drawing the game.
So we got a draw. Draw's not a loss.
Draw's not a loss. It got okay. We just honed in on the Magda Vile Smasher the entire time to make sure that they couldn't win.
Malcolm Vile Smasher.
Why do I keep saying that? That's so funny.
Because Magda's also in
and
this spot.
I want to keep saying that Magda like was playing with his hands revealed the whole time.
Like on purpose, just to show
on
the table?
On purpose. Well, yeah, because he's like, hey, I'm not the threat. I'm making a couple treasures, but I'm the threat.
Typical Magda move. Doesn't matter what's in your hand anyway.
I have Deflecting Swat and Red Elemental Blast in my hand. And in my head, I'm like, dude,
That's so scary.
That means we can't stop you from winning.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Okay, well, a draw is good. Draw is better than a loss.
It was the longest game of the day. The only one of my games that went to time. Very cool.
It was not the longest game of the day, Cameron.
My longest game of the day is what I thought I said. But I've been misspeaking every 2 seconds so far. So
I can go by my round.
It's a tasty little breadcrumb for later.
So for me, I had TNT, which was another Timnathrasius, I guess. Kinnan, and then Galadriel was in the other spot.
Gnarly.
I'm just going to read what I wrote, and I'll try to translate it afterwards. Please,
quick question.
Go.
Is this the Bant Galadriel?
Whenever a creature enters, you make 3 mana or do something else.
You scry 2, then draw maybe 2 cards or gain life or something.
It's just one card.
Or you put a 1/1 counter on each creature you control, or you add 3 green, I believe. This was Matt that was playing Galadriel. I played him later.
Nice. My hand was Felwar Stone, Ancient Tomb, Swift Reconfiguration, Devoted Druid, Fierce Guardianship, Mental Misstep, which is pretty good because I have Devoted Druid and Swift Reconfiguration as well as Counterspells are in my hand, but my only mana is Ancient Tomb and Felwar Stone, which is like kind of iffy, so I need to hit another land drop. I didn't hit it on my first draw or my second draw, but I did hit it on turn 3. On turn 3, I have the land drop. I eventually end up with casting Silence and a huge stack of war develops where I have a Mental Misstep, a Fierce Guardianship, and a Veil of Summer. All of those things I haven't cast. 4 pieces of interaction on turn 3. It finally goes through. My Silence resolves. I can Swift Reconfiguration on the Devoted Druid, make infinite mana, and I have Thrasios out at that point, and I won the game. It felt like I just had everything. I was like apologizing to my opponent, so I'm like, I truly have like literally 4 pieces of interaction on turn 3, but they had 3 pieces of stuff on turn 3 too. I think I got lucky. I just I kept a little bit of a sketchy hand, although it feels busted because it's like just the win and protection. I just need to find mana in time, and I found mana by turn 3, which kind of makes sense because about a third of my deck is lands, and draw 1/2 on turn 3, I hit a land. And 1 out of 3 cards is going to be land, so math worked out for me this time. I have a win.
So we each got a different possible outcome to our game.
Yes, exactly. Some diversity.
That sounds great. Tyler, how was your round 2?
My round 2. All right, so I was in seat 2, round 2. We had Justin on Obnixilis in seat 1, then me, then Jake on Derevi, and then Don playing Lannis. The 3-mana Lannis, not the 2-mana Lannis. They're both interesting decks, but this is the one that does extruder stuff and like all that crap. So Derevi ended up getting this one by untapping the One Ring a zillion times, as Derevi can. 10. I tried to go for it with an early Bowmasters and then Smothering Tithe, and I had a Wheel of Fortune. So, like, that's kind of the hand that I kept, is, like, not really a Quark plan, but just, like, Smothering Tithe, Wheel, and Bowmasters is just three great cards that play together real nice. Two opponents had counterspells. I did have a dual caster to honestly copy the Wheel of Fortune, so I thought I was going to get away with it, because I was like, haha, I'll just put another one on the set. And it didn't work. And since that was the whole hand that I kept, as soon as that got blown out, I was fucking done. Derevi got to run away with it. It was a pretty straightforward game from there.
Yeah, Derevi, I feel, is good at that. Doing that hit and second role of, like, waiting for someone to go for it and then, like, winning after top of that.
Yeah, I agree.
How'd your round two go, Cam?
So I'm up against Sisse, another Tim Thrasios player, a Kinnan player, and then me. So I'm going last again. Sisse starts off with a really good start with, like, a ton of mana. The Tim Thrasios player goes next and has one land, and, like, that's his thing for the whole game, is just stuck on one land. Kinnan player counters my turn two Rhystic Study, which was a bit of a shame. But I did still have a turn three, the One Ring, but it just wasn't enough. Sisse just establishes a board so well. I even had a turn four Seedborn Muse to go along with my turn three, the One Ring. I drew five lands with the One Ring. It was exclusively lands that I drew in that whole turn cycle, and had one spell in my hand that couldn't do anything. So
stinky.
Sisse won?
Sisse cleaned that up super quickly. I should have done more talking, though. That's what I learned that game. Because afterwards, the Kinnan player told me that there was a Cyclonic Rift in their hand. If I would have known that, I would have tried to convince them to not just run out a bunch of mana dorks and just be like, hey, Sisse is, like, in a really good spot. We need to hold up interaction. I ended up not doing a lot of talking throughout the day, and I've been trying to do more talking in general, so
yeah,
I should just stick with what I've been trying to do.
Yeah, I have to. I feel like a lot of times, yeah, it's just so important.
So I'm 0-1-1. The zero in my record is still not where I want it to be.
With this point, we also need to, I guess, mention that what we're looking for with this tournament to get into top 16 is normally 12 points. You get 5 points for a win and 1 point for a draw. So normally, 2 wins and 2 draws is, like, a guaranteed in. Sometimes 11 points can get in. So 2 wins, 2 losses, and a draw, sometimes that can get in. Very rarely, or I guess rarely, but, like, normally a couple squeak into top 16. But the goal to kind of lock yourself normally is 12 points, right?
Two things I want to add to that real quick, just in terms of thinking about where you're placing in a tournament. First of all, this was over 96 people by just a little bit. I think we were at 102 when this fired. So it was, like, slightly bigger, which makes it even harder to get in with 11 points. There's less of a bubble there, as they call it. And then on top of that, you really want early wins, because typically, if you win early, the tiebreakers that decide who's getting in with 11 points and who's not are going to be better than if you win games later in the day.
Yeah, also, I think it's helpful if you win earlier, it gives you the opportunity to draw later in the day, whereas if you don't win early, now you are forced to continue to play the entire tournament, which, like, sounds like forced to play, but, like, if you're trying to make it to the top 16 and win a tournament, taking a round off on a draw that you draw with people to, like, give your mind a break and get food can be, like, really helpful.
Legitimately very important.
This tournament went past midnight at the finals, so, like, it's relevant when you're playing from, like, literally over 12 hours of Magic. It's important.
It went past 1:30 a.m.
I didn't want to give it away too much. It went very late. I wanted to give a general of it went past midnight. It went over 12 hours. I can talk about my round two.
Take it away, round two.
I went first again, playing against Yawgmoth, Marnius, and Nigila. There was a lot of talking in this game. There was a lot of chatter. Yawgmoth gets out early. What's the scheming when it enters?
Scheming symmetry.
Fence. The creature.
Scheming fence.
Scheming fence, is that what it is? When it enters, target creature's activated abilities don't have them anymore, and
permanent,
it has them instead.
Target permanent.
Target permanent. No more activated abilities for that. Permanent for your Soul Ring, for your Yawgmoth, which is what
for
this
your one ring.
For your One Ring. And then it gains those abilities, which is really nice. So Amarni's player had that pretty early on the Yawgmoth, which was great. For a second, it was kind of questionable with Nigila, and we were wondering, like, should we be letting Yawgmoth do Yawgmoth thing to keep Nigila in check or something? I went for an early win. I had a squirrel, the Brewmaster. Brewmaster and Devoted Druid. The issue was I cast the Brewmaster early just as, like, a value Brewmaster to exile someone's mana dork, make a food that can tap for a mana. And then on my turn, I wanted to attack with the Brewmaster. And at that point, I had put Devoted Druid in my graveyard. I was trying to get it off of the attack trigger. What I didn't realize in the math is Yawgmoth can proliferate. So even though the Marnius player only had 3 creatures in play, and I'm thinking that's 3 -1, -1 counters, and I have a 4 toughness creature, I forgot about proliferate, which means that the Marnius player was still able to use Yawgmoth to proliferate and then still in my combo kill my squirrel. At this point, he kind of offers me, like, a deal of, like, hey, I don't want to do this. Like, can you not go for a win? Like, don't do this and I won't do it. Like, we found the line. And at the time, we had been talking a lot, and I was like, you're the late game Marnius player. I kind of want you to trash your whole board so that I can't go for win right now, because I still got a ton of cards in my hand. And then if you lose your Marnius, which is great for me, like that's how I make it into late game. So I'm like, nah, if you want to like just do it, I'm okay with kind of wrathing your board in order for me not win this turn. And then what kind of happened is he has to block with the scheming thing, which now is dead, and then the Yawgmoth can turn back on, and the Yawgmoth can get to a point where he thinks he can win, but we're now at like almost time of the round, and I tell Yawgmoth, like, I have a bunch of interaction, like I show him a little bit, like I don't think you can try, but like I don't think you're gonna be able to go for it, and if you can't go for it and then the time ends and the Marnie's players goes, then we're probably gonna lose. And basically we get to the point where like the round is like almost called, and we just draw. We call it a draw, and then I have a win, as no losses, and a draw at this point.
Must be nice. At this point I'm at 0-2 and I'm like, oh, I'm cooked.
I know, I'm feeling great. I'm like, Tyler's has two losses, I have a win and a draw, like this is my opportunity, I can do this.
Well, and it was my roommate's birthday, and my boyfriend was out with my roommate for his birthday, and I had told them, like, look, if I scrub out, I might be able to like join you for dinner and go out and stuff.
Which you probably like looking forward to. I text
Charlie, and I'm like, oh, maybe gonna be able to see you after all. Yeah. Like,
we won't get too many spoilers. Let's just go to round three and see what happens.
Wait, next. How'd your round three go? Yeah.
My round three, okay, so this was I was in seat three on this one. I was against Dalton. This is New York Dalton, I believe, not Baltimore Dalton, who ended up doing well in the tournament. This was Kodama Silas Dalton, then Matt on Gladriel, who you played as well, then me in third seat, and then Adam on Najeela, who I played in an earlier round, so I was surprised to be paired in that pod, but be that as it may. This one started with like a really slow game. There was Bowmasters and Ranger Captains that felt like they were kind of locking everything down, doing a lot of creature removal, which was really relevant against the Galadriel player. So it felt like a lot of things are kind of being held in check, and like no one could really push in the beginning. I was just deploying like a couple value pieces for a while, including like Professional Facebreaker, a relatively early Roaming Throne, and a Harmonic Prodigy, and then got Quark out. So like I had all these pieces out, but I really couldn't push, and I really didn't have that much gas to push. So there was one turn cycle where I shut down the Galadriel win attempt after Dalton got stopped from an Eldritch Evolution for a Thoracle that would have been a win. I had a Swords in hand, and I was able to get a little lucky with the multiple Quark flips I have, and basically Swords like Galadriel's entire board and a bunch of other stuff, like resolved like 5 Swords to Plowshares or something. And then on the next turn cycle, it looked like we were going to hit time. It just barely got back to me. I was kind of saying like, hey, it seems like you don't have anything, like you gotta take game actions or whatever.
Yeah.
And it just got back to me before time was called, and that turn I was able to get it. I saw in half Tyrant Scoundrel a bunch of times to be able to make like a zillion treasures every time I cast spells, and then with all those treasures and Professional Facebreaker out, I was able to start digging through my deck, exiling the top. There was a known Flusterstorm at this point, which is a really tough one to fight in Quark, so I was just exiling stuff until I hit a silence, and then once I cast that silence, like that's where the fight has to happen.
Yeah,
with Flusterstorms, and I was able to win over top of that.
Yeah, you get to a point in that deck so quickly where like every time you cast a spell, it nets you mana, so it doesn't matter if it like resolves or it goes back to your hand. Like you almost kind of like want it to go back to your hand a couple times sometimes, so you like use it to make a bunch of mana, and then when it finally does resolve 2 times, you're like, great, then I have gotten 3 or 4 or maybe more of that effect by that point. Kind of crazy, that deck goes so nutty.
Yeah, so that was a win that I just barely got in time.
So you're still alive.
Staying alive.
You have 5 points. We're still on track. There's 2 more rounds.
Technically still alive, but like because I know my breakers are going to be bad, I probably have to win out. So like I have 2 more games that I have to win in a row. So I'm still not feeling great at this point.
Okay. What was your round three?
So round three, it's Crick, and then me, and then Obnixilus, and then a Timna Malcolm deck that's going up.
Okay.
So my hand was Force of Will with no blue card, Mox Diamond with 2 lands, and Bowmaster. I flubbed turn 1 big time. I still remembered to cast Orcish Bowmaster, but not in response to the Esper Sentinel trigger that Malcolm Timna got. So I just like lose out on a damage, and I even miscommunicated with the Crick player because I was like, oh, are you going to feed Esper Sentinel this turn, as if I was going to destroy it with Bowmaster before he has the chance to feed it, but he thought I meant, are you paying for an Esper Sentinel trigger instead? Extra card, I lose out on damage. I did 2 things to make something worse for myself. Which ended
small
up
things, but
small things, but like I could still cast Timna on turn 2, which helped me get 2 cards then on that turn. One of them was Gaia's Cradle. Holy cow, that's really helpful. And then just over the course of the next 2 turns, I drew into Devoted Druid and Machine God's Effigy. Just naturally. Sometimes you just had, it was like you with your one game where you like just kind of want to apologize to your opponents for how it goes. So I got there. We're now 1-1-1, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Pretty good. My round three was me, Michael, Vile Smasher, Sisse, and Rock Thrass. This point I want to mention, I've been now first three times in a row after this round. I talked to Aaron and I say, what's going on? Am I sticky? Like, is this a bug? And he looked into it and no, I just got a lot of variants. I'm just going to tell you right now, in the other two rounds, I also went first. So I don't know. I think I just went first
all five times.
All five rounds. And I think it's just the variance. I asked Aaron to check with the developer. He said that it's normal. It's fine. You weren't always the same position throughout the day, right?
No, well, I was fourth twice in a row.
But twice in a row, not all five rounds.
Not all five rounds.
So
no.
what you're raising your hand?
Oh, I was raising my hand because a couple weeks ago I had a call with the developer of Spice Rack where we were talking about possible features that are coming up.
Yeah.
And he brought this up himself. Like, hey, we've had feedback that like, even though it is just like variance and sometimes that's going to happen, like it feels bad in a tournament if you go fourth four times, or if you go first five times, that also feels unfair. I think they're working on a feature to like kind of give some weight to seat order so that you aren't going fourth or first like five times in a row or whatever. So I think that's probably a feature that they're eventually going to implement. In law of large numbers terms, like, it does work out in the wash eventually. Like, it is random.
Yeah.
But, like, random sometimes means you have those crazy results and those feel really bad, especially if it's fourth, four times, whatever.
I'm sure next tournament I will go last four times in a row and be cursing the gods. But, yeah, so this time, so far I'm just, like, taking, I'm like, okay, I'll go first. That's great. But I did talk to Aaron and I did ask him to check to make sure, like, is there nothing sticky with my name or anything? And he said, no, it is just the variant. So, is what it is. I kept Mystic Remora, Kinnan, Force of Will, Tundra, Mox Diamond, which is a five if you're counting. I basically have the Mystic Remora and then only draw interaction, and my opponents are all playing very aggressive. So if you remember, there's Malcolm Vile Smasher, Sisse, and Rock Thrass. Malcolm Vile Smasher goes for, I think, a turn one Necropotence, which I happen to have, I don't know, what, a Force of Will and a blue card for. Plays Malcolm the next turn, and then the following turn plays a Lively Dirge, which, if you don't know, Lively Dirge can just go find Malcolm and put, or the Glenhorn and put it right in play, and he's got Malcolm there. So I'm like, well, shit, like, are you gonna, like, if you don't find Malcolm, I'll let this resolve. And he goes, nah, I think I'll find Malcolm. So I say, okay, all right, if you're gonna do, I'm gonna Force of the other blue
negation,
card. Force
probably.
Of Negation, pitch another blue card. And I don't want to be doing this because I've already mulliganed, but I have had the Mystic Remora, and all I'm drawing is counterspells, and he's putting wins on the stacks, and my opponents are in priority before me, and they go, I don't have anything. So I'll say, okay, I try to do that. Basically, the game goes for a long time, and eventually we like kind of run out of time. Like, we know that the time is coming. I have a Cyclonic Rift. I put a Cyclonic Rift on the stack.
A big rift.
Overload. The Malcolm player says, I have to tap mana. I'm not going to respond to the Cyclonic Rift, but I am going to use this mana to cast this Ad Nauseam afterwards because we're still in their end step.
Right.
We're at the point now where, like, I know if I counter the Ad Nauseam, we're going to very quickly go to the next player, and we're not at time yet, and I think he can win at that point. I think it was Sisse was after him, so I think that, like, Sisse can win at that point. So we basically get it to a point where I say, I'm gonna let the Ad Nauseam resolve. The Ad Nauseam resolves, he does it for a long time, and we go to time, and he can't find a win. Basically, he's still in his end step, and he can't win the games in his end step right now because the mana that he floated was black, and he did find the instant speed extra turn spell Final Fortune, so he doesn't have the ability to cast in his end step. And I show him, like, hey, I can counter like one or two things right now, and we all just kind of agree that, like, it would take way too long to finish this game. It would just like take like 1,000 game actions, so we just call it a draw at that point. That's another one where, had we been playing a normal game of CDH, that would have went very differently. I think I would have countered the Ad Nauseam. I think I would have let the game just continue on and then hope that it would get back to me, because I did have like a reasonable amount of interaction. I just, the other players had a whole bunch of game actions. Marnius had 1,000 game actions they could take at that point. Or not Marnius, Rog Thrass it was. So that was it. So it was a draw. So right now I am 1 win and 2 draws. I have 7 points. So one more win will lock me in. If I have 2 more rounds, as long as I win one of them, I can get into top 16.
It's getting really hard to win games of tournament CEDH.
Yeah.
Like, that's something else that I realized. Like, there's so much that can happen. There's so many pieces in play that are slowing down the game. And there's so much talking going on now that, like, it just makes everything take 6 times as long as it used to, even like a year ago.
It did feel a lot of the times that if someone puts something on the stack and someone looks like they're about to counterspell, they say, well, all right, before you counterspell, let's talk. If it's a tutor, let me get something else. I'm not going to get a win. I'll get a draw engine instead. And normally, if you have the counterspell, a lot of players say, okay, go get a draw engine. I'm not going to counter spell because I want this counter spell still in my hand. Whereas realistically, sometimes I wonder if that's not even right. Sometimes you have to just like, don't let them get a Rhystic Study. Like, you know what I mean? But you get put in these situations where the player after you is going to go for a win. So if I counter spell your thing that's going to get a Rhystic Study, then the player after you is going to win. Like, it's just what's going to happen. I can see the board. I know that Magda has enough resources or whatever the case may be. So you kind of have to talk, but at the same time, sometimes I feel like it is disadvantaged. I feel like I do this sometimes even where I talk myself into like a bad situation almost where I should have just used it.
And then like it gives someone the ability to play around the information that you give out because you end up talking too much. Yeah.
In terms of like tournament time and stuff, I just want to add that like I found myself this tournament saying a lot more often than before, who has priority? Like someone needs to be making a decision. We can't talk about it forever.
Yeah.
And like, I think people need to be saying more of that as table talk starts taking up half the time that you're playing the game. There comes a point where you just won't ever be able to get beyond, say, turn four or perhaps turn five if every single decision is scrutinized and discussed by the entire table.
And everyone's and passing frankly, cards around
yeah,
to show
showing cards.
Too.
I have this, don't yeah. go for it. I have this, don't go for
and
it. Yeah.
That's only good for decks that can win fast. And like, I'm not interested in a meta where only win fast decks are capable of winning tournaments. That sucks.
Yeah. And even then, it feels like a lot of the games that I'm in, people have interaction. Like, they don't want to lose the game in tournaments. So they're keeping hands that are full of interaction, so the turn two wins don't go for it. Like sometimes the turn one wins don't even go for it. Like you keep these hands that are all interaction, so the fast decks can't go for it, and then you quickly get into a state of turn three where we all have card draw engines in play because that's what we kept. We all have interaction in play, and you know that you can't put a win through three different players. You know what I mean? Everyone's got 10 cards in their hand. That's 30 cards. You have enough counter spells. I can't go for win, so I just pass.
Well, it's not even just the counter spells. It's the Valley Flood Callers and the Born Upon the wins too. So like even if you do try to push, someone pushes on top of you and then steals your victory from right underneath your
legs. The stack. Yeah,
I was gonna say pants.
No, victory lives under the legs.
Victory does.
And a lot of times throughout the tournament, I saw a lot of these stacks where basically players' spells get locked up in the stack. Where like everyone's got 20 cards, everyone's got instant speed, everyone's got 1,000 mana. So anytime something is cast, everyone just responds over top it. I'm gonna cast a silence. Okay, in response to your silence, I'm gonna try to do all these things. Okay, in response to all these things, I'm gonna cast a Veil of Summer. Okay, now and then all these things just get like locked in the stack basically, and then the player who wins is the player who can win on top of all of that shit, and none of it's going to resolve because you win over top of it, which is fun, but takes a long ass time to complete. It's just like, it's time consuming. It takes forever. Yes.
Which is why I don't mind there being draws to time limits. I just think like,
we got to do something, I think.
We got to do something.
Yeah, we didn't get out of there until after midnight, and that kind of sucks for the...
Spoilers,
dude. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Spoilers. Okay. Whose turn is it?
We're going to Tyler's round four.
Round four.
So at this point, I'm 1-2, not feeling great. In round four, in seat one is Billy, who's playing Jessica Timna. I think I played him the last time too. John Vafnar in one of our Discords is on Atraxa. He's the one who brought Judge Tower, and Judge Tower is really fun.
Cool.
Thanks, John. Then I'm in seat three, and Fernando, our local player, who turns 21 in 2 weeks, so maybe right around when this comes
out.
Happy birthday, Fernando. He's playing Loot, a relatively new fun deck that I think has been showing up a lot. This game started really slow with people being kind of disciplined about Mystic Remora that John had early, and I had an Esper Sentinel early. Billy also tried to have a turn one Esper Sentinel, but it got misstepped, and then it was Mystic Remora Esper Sentinel, so that was an interesting turn one. Yep. Billy went like crazy all in on Timna by cracking LED turn two, putting Savine's Reclamation and Faithless Looting in the bin, but then leaving himself with just Timna on the battlefield. Timna and a land, which is, you know, a hope and a prayer, but like in the long game that might work because Savine's is in the yard, so on and so forth. I leaned into a Timna grindy game too. I got Professional Facebreaker down. I was scoring kind of a lot of treasures and drawing a fair amount with Timna. I ended up silencing a turn from John on Atraxa because he kind of indicated that he was finding a Culling Ritual, and I did not want to get Culling Ritualed. I untapped that turn, kind of hoping I was going to be able to jam, but not sure I could, and I got stopped by Talon Gates from Fernando that hit Krark. And without Krark, it's very, very hard for me to win in the Krark Timna deck. It's close to impossible.
Most of your lines revolve around like storming with Krark, right?
It's in the name.
Pretty much. It was starting to get close to time, so I ended up deciding I have to try and do some pushing here anyway, after like waffling about it, not being sure I could. But after the Timna draws, I thought maybe I can put something weird together. So I cast an Imperial Recruiter to go find a Draenith, and I was hoping with the Draenith to bait counterspells. That didn't work. I should have just found a Grand Abolisher. This might have gone differently. But then I fired off a Molten Duplication on Recruiter to go find Bowmasters. I cast Bowmasters. I cast an Enlightened Tutor, put Breach on the top with Enlightened Tutor, then exiled it with Professional Facebreaker so I could cast it that turn, and then cast a Wheel of Fortune. So this means with Breach, which had resolved, I might be able to put something together with Bowmasters to kill the table naturally. I almost got away with it by killing everyone with Breach Wheels.
Oh, if it weren't for those meddling kids?
If it weren't for John's Veil of Summer. I killed the other two players, and he was able to Veil of Summer to give himself Hexproof from Black, so I couldn't hit him with Bowmaster triggers. So it ended in a draw because of that. And, I mean, great play in John. One of the wheels got him into the Veil of Summer.
Okay.
Yeah, it was an interesting pattern. But, yeah, so that one was a draw. And at this point, I am feeling probably knocked out because I'm 1-2-1, not great.
1-2-1, you have a draw. If you win your next one, you'll be at 11 points. So if you win your next round, you might get in, but you still might not.
And I think my breakers are bad because of
you lost early.
Yeah, early losses.
All right, what about you, Cam? How was your next round?
So it's Magda, Timna Thrasios, and then me, and then Tivit. Timna Thrasios and me both had turn one fish, which felt great. And so everyone else, the Tivit player and the Magda player, decided not to feed the fishes the whole time, which kind of made the beginning of the game very anticlimactic, but also put Magda in a really good situation. Like, Magda can still play dwarves, can still run out Magda, can still start to make treasures through not feeding fish, and then all just on one turn, you can decide, I'm just going to go for it. So actually, I think the first Timna Thras player had sacrificed their fish, and I had kept mine around, and he only had to feed me like a couple cards before he could start looking really threatening with Roaming Throne and Zorn together, which is making three treasures per Magda activation. So I showed the Tivit player a Worldly Tutor in my hand with a Mox Amber and my Thrasios there, and I say, this is all I can do, and I just show them that, and that's enough to scare the Magda player into having to think of a new line entirely.
Oh, you spooked them.
The problem with bluffing, though, is that if they call your bluff, they can still win.
Yeah.
So he just finds a different line that he could still go for, and he still won the game. I showed him the Worldly Tutor, and he was like, oh, man, I can't believe I fell for that at that point. It was such a fun game. Magda's still such a cool deck. So, yeah, really good win. So now I am 1-2-1. I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Tyler. Like,
but with better breakers.
Slightly, because I only got a draw in that first round. So I still don't feel amazing, and I followed that draw up with a loss. So we'll see. I got to get another round in.
I'm going to read my round 4. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense. I'll try to translate it afterwards. Round 4, Green-White Silvala get turn 1 Grand Abolisher. Turn 4 comes around, and Silvala has drawn us a bunch of cards. I don't think I can stop Silvala no matter what I do. So even if I get rid of the Grand Abolisher, I have the option to Wishclaw for removal for Grand Abolisher, but also the other players have all drawn a whole 1,000 cards. So I think if I waste my whole turn to get rid of Grand Abolisher, just so that Silvala can maybe win anyway, or these other two players. So instead, I decide to fight for a Grand Abolisher. It gets stopped. I try to use the Wishclaw to instead get an uncounterable Kinnan. I had already put Basalt Monolith in play, and they're like, okay, that's fine. I use Wishclaw to go find Kinnan, and I have Blood Halfling. So I'm like, hee-hee, those fools. I know they have Force of Will at this point. So I'm like, Glarb is in this pot and has a ton of interaction, has drawn a bunch of interaction, and has kind of told me that he has a bunch of interaction, but it's tapped out, and I know about Force of Will. So I'm like, what else could you have? So I have this uncounterable Kinnan. I try to put on the stack. Mindbreak Trap. Yeah, of course. So my Kinnans get Mindbreak Trapped. I spend my whole turn to like try to fight over this Grand Abolisher that gets countered anyway. Try to fight over this Wishclaw Talisman. I do all these things. I blow all my stuff, blow everyone else's stuff up, and then or blow their counter spells out. And then I think I don't feel that bad because then I pass to Silvala, who has a Grand Abolisher out, and then just Windsville Silvala, untap Silvala a bunch of times, draws us a bunch of cards, and eventually gets us somewhere. What do you got?
I think you should just clarify that this is Parlay Silvala, the white-green one, not mono-green.
Not mono-green.
Silvala.
I think I said green-white, but in case I didn't, yeah, specifically the green-white one that says every time it taps, it reveals a top card of each player's library. He makes a bunch of mana. Silvala makes a bunch of mana and draws cards and has a bunch of things that can untap Silvala and just draws us through our decks, but it doesn't matter because Grand Abolisher is out.
Yeah, only really works when a Grand Grand Abolishers out, but yeah, that's pretty cool.
It was kind of interesting. I played right until Sovala's hand because it basically gave everyone a bunch of resources, and then I was the first one with a bunch of resources to go for it, and then the other players, they have a bunch of resources, so they have enough to stop me. I was kind of getting cocky thinking, like, I have either Grand Abolisher or Delighted Halfling. I have, like, a very protected win, and y'all are tapped out. So, like, yeah, you have a bunch of cards. You have to just have the right free stuff, and they didn't. So, looking back, maybe I should have just, I mean, with the information that I have, I should have wish-clawed for removal spell for Grand Abolisher and say, hey, everyone, let's try to stop Sovala. But I didn't do that. I tried to jam instead and got punished, and Sovala won.
That's funny how Sovala just pushes the whole win second, win the game.
Yeah.
Issue.
Yeah, because someone's going to fall for the bait like I did and say, well, I have enough to go for it. And then the other players will, hopefully, the goal, I would imagine, is to be able to stop them.
Probably not good if, like, you pass to, like, the blue player and then, like, right, you're only against other Rakdos decks. That's probably not as good right there.
I imagine there's some turn sequences that make it different. But the turn one Grand Abolisher made it kind of an easy game for Sovala, I want to say, because they could just, like, kind of freely give us a whole bunch of cards and not really care about
That's
it.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I got my loss. So now I'm going into round five knowing that I must win my next round if I want to get in. A draw won't do it for me because even if I get a draw, that'll be three draws and a win, which is 8 points, not 11, so I have to win my next round.
So we're all kind of banking on winning in.
We're all in that situation, and it's not necessarily winning in because we're all at one win equals 11 points, where maybe you make it, maybe you don't, right?
Yeah, well, no, I'm at if I win, it is a winning in, because I already have a win in two draws, which means if I get another win, I'll have 12 points, and from what I understand so far, 12 is a lock. I don't know, there might, if it plays out super weird, maybe it's not that, but 12 has always been a lock.
But Cam and I are in the 11-point
situation.
We're in
a little stickier situation. I feel like
precarious.
My hands are covered in jelly.
Sticky?
Jelly.
Sticky!
Take it away, Tyler. How did your last round go?
Okay, so round five, I was in seat one, and then Diada in seat two. That was John. Andrew was on Tyam in seat three, and Zach on Tivit in seat four. This one, I played DRC Pass. I kept what felt like a slow hand, but Lotho is a card I love seeing, and turn two Lotho in seat one feels pretty good.
Really
so
good, yeah.
So I played DRC Pass. Diada played Ragavan. Tivit was on a Muldafor, poor Zach, so didn't do much. Turn two, I played Lotho and Pass. Diada hits with Ragavan, casts an Entomb, and then Animate deads the Abdaladrian that was just entombed. A lot of times you think of Abdaladrian as an infinite mana combo that then just wins on the spot, but you must remember it also, when a thing leaves the battlefield, it makes a 1-1. So this play was just, it's turn two, I'm just going to make infinite 1-1s and then say, you have something or you lose. You need to be able to kill infinite 1-1s or win or you lose. And this is on turn two, so we're like, we're toast.
Yeah.
We're absolutely dead. Neither of my other opponents do a lot, but I do ask Zach on Tivit to play two spells to get a Lotho trigger because I'm looking at my hand with a Beseech the Mirror in it and thinking, maybe, if I get very lucky, there's a way that I can go find Ashling, the 4-mana Ashling, because if you hit its second Magecraft trigger, it deals 2 damage to each opponent and each creature your opponents control.
That's
so it
would
wipe all the
1-1s.
And I'm like, I think this is the only way I can not lose the game here. So he does cast two spells. I get a Lotho trigger. I'm at like 2 treasures, but still not feeling great.
Do you communicate that it's because you want to cast an Ashling, or do you say I need...
Yeah, I said the whole thing. I was like, we were communicating super openly. Everyone's just like, you're the only one who can maybe even stop this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm like, this is what I'm hoping for. This is what I can go for that I can think of. That's, you know, we'll see if I can do it, but I don't think I can. So I untap. I do have a Deadly Rollick in hand, so I know I'm going to be able to hit at least one free spell for the Ashling. And if I can get Krark out, then I can cast a free spell and get the Magecraft trigger, and that would be 2 resolves. So there is a line, it's just nearly impossible. So I untap, I have Strike at Rich in hand, and I go ahead and draw Jeskha's Will, which was pretty cool.
Jeskha's Will is so good in your deck.
It is
like,
so
right?
good.
It's like ad nauseum better sometimes.
It is.
Right?
Yeah. All of these lines, even if I do the Beseech thing, they're all going to absolutely require me to get lucky on a Krark flip, like a raw Krark flip, no extra flips, and just jam it. So I think a ton, and then I play Krark. I cast Strike at Rich and make 2 treasures, so I won the flip on that. Also critical. And then I also win the raw flip on Jeskha's Will, targeting someone with 5 cards on hand. So I make 10 red. And off the top, I exile Birgi, the One Ring, Diabolic Intent, and 3 lands. Then I realized that the One Ring would give me protection, which means I wouldn't die to infinite 1-1s.
Nice.
My opponents would, but I wouldn't. So I'm feeling like, okay, I at least have a backup plan where I don't die. But I did all this talking about going to find Ashling. I think I should still try and go and find Ashling, wipe this so that I don't just let my opponents die and then have to survive another turn somehow. Yeah. This still doesn't feel good.
You're going to have to get rid of them anyway, right?
Just get rid of them. 100%. So I try to Diabolic Intent, sack Lotho, and I miss the flip on that one. I then sack Hog, Hope of Ghirapur, and Fat Hogs, you know. And
I like really emphasizing, I sacrifice Hog. Say that word as long as you can. Hog.
And at this point, Zach points out that I should have just sacrificed the Quark with Diabolic Intent, because then it would definitely resolve, and I could go get the Ashling and do the thing. And I was too stupid to see it. But at this point, it's too late to now do that, because I've spent too many treasures and now I'm kind of screwed. So I had Caspergy before these Diabolic Intent. So I'm generating a lot of red, but I'm constrained on other pips. I end up casting One Ring and I activate and I draw Delny. This feels really good right now because that doubles Quark triggers and that makes it feel like maybe I can get somewhere. So I cast the Delny. With the extra Quark triggers, I am able to finally resolve a Diabolic Intent. I sack Burgi for this one. And I get a Tavern Scoundrel and a Dark Ritual with the two Diabolic Intents. This lets me start to go up in treasures because the Tavern Scoundrel also triggers off of Delny twice.
Which gets insane. Every time you win, you make six... Well, how many treasures you make?
Every time you win, you make four treasures. Two on its own, Delny doubles it.
Yeah, four treasures every time you win a flip is nuts, yeah.
Pretty good. I'm able to then saw in half the Scoundrel a few times, which gives me plenty of treasures to start jamming win cons, because I still have that Beseech the Mirror. So I start sacrificing a treasure to bargain Beseech, and then copies of Beseech are also bargained, so I can cast the spells for free, and I'm able to just put together a win, which I sort of felt bad about, because I was like, I'm going to go find Ashling, but like, I drew the Delny, everything went right, I got unbelievably lucky with flips in that game. I had no business winning this game.
Did you ever get Ashling in play?
I never got Ashling.
I would after you set up the one, I would have still got Ashling in play and still tried to do it just so you could like kill all the creatures and then win afterwards. But fair.
It already took long enough to take these 1 million game actions.
You didn't want to waste the time. Okay, cool. So you got to win. So that means you're maybe in top 16.
So I'm at 11 points, but didn't think my breakers were good. Somewhere around here, I go get pizza because this game ended early enough that I can finally eat for the first time that day. And I look at the breakers and I'm like, okay, they're not as bad as I thought, but they're not amazing. It depends on where everything else lands and how everyone else's breakers land. So I think I'm probably still not making top 16, but I don't know. And I have to hang around and find out.
Okay. You're round five.
So I got up against Magda, Stella Lee, New Loot, and then Meath. I didn't go last five times today, but I went last three times. So I mulled the four and... This game, I didn't.
You're over it. I was so over it. You're like four on the last game. Fuck
dude, it wasn't even going last. It wasn't even the mold of four. It was Magda goes turn one Chalice of the Void into Sphere of Resistance.
Chalice on zero.
Yeah. So I'm looking at my hand like, all right, well, I can't cast Sol Ring. I only have Bayou as my only mana source. So I play Bayou. Loot also only has lands and does nothing else. Yeah. That was the whole game. Magda ran away with it. I never drew a second thing. I cast Pact of Negation, paying one mana for it so it would get countered by Chalice of the Void for fun. That was the only spell that I cast that game. So that was a very quick end of my day. I bought a box of Dominaria, Remastered, Collector Boosters, and lost money on that too. So it was a fun.
But opened some good fun cards.
I opened a lot of good fun cards. I had a good fun day. I learned a lot. I should just keep talking in games.
We were talking earlier about how, like, don't talk because it takes too much time, but we'll also talk because it is extremely advantageous.
Sometimes that's how you have to win. It's like you have to let stuff happen. Yeah.
My round five, my first words are lose to Quark. I'm not even going to. I lose to Quark. So
not me.
not you. Tyler, the other Tyler who we talked about earlier, who you
I
teamed up
this with. Yeah.
Yes. Tyler beat me in this last round. I lose to Quark. I play turn one Delighted Halfling, turn two Thrasios, sword something on Quark's board. I know that Tyler is a great player. I talked to the whole table about, like, we need to be doing stuff. So I sword something on Quark's board. I think one of the wizard, whenever a wizard casts a spell, it triggers again, Harmonic Prodigy. I end up swordsing that. I go back and forth. Should I kill Quark? Should I kill that? I decide to kill the Harmonic Prodigy. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe I should kill Quark.
Nope, that was correct.
Okay, cool. Sweet. That's what I thought. Turn three, I have Timna Moxamber to hold up a turn four Smothering Tithe, which someone tries to steel enchant. I swan song it because I'm like, oh no, Quark's about to do a bunch of stuff. I would like some treasures to interact. So I swan song the steel enchantment, and then everyone's still really afraid of my Smothering Tithe, which makes sense. Timna Thrasios with a Smothering Tithe is good, but so it's fucking Quark. So then we go to Quark and Sakashima's turn, and in that player's turn, the same player who tried to steel enchant my Smothering Tithe has a Force of Vigor that destroys my Smothering Tithe. And then also, I think like a relic of mana that the Karkin Sakashima has?
They're on Legends. Relic of Legends.
I think he was on Relic of Legends. Maybe it was some other type of mana rock.
I think it runs that, yeah.
So he destroys that too. So I'm like, my Smothering Tithe is gone, but I guess at least you killed that rock thing too, so that we're fine. We have a bunch of interaction. I have Beseju as my last piece. Maybe I shouldn't have used the Swan Song on the first Steel Enchantment, but that felt insane to give another player a Smothering Tithe. So I Swan Song that. And then basically Tyler got very lucky. If I remember correctly, I don't know if it was this turn or another, but he gets a copy of a Desperate Ritual, which makes him like a raw Krark, so he gets 6 red mana. He casts a cantrip, give your creature haste, draw a card, and at this point he like found another clone at this point, so his red cantrip is a draw 3 cards, and he just is able to do the Krark stuff. It feels kind of very early in the game, but he just takes like 40 minutes making game actions the whole time and eventually gets to a win and crushes us after I feel like we had a ton of interaction for him. So it kind of just proved that like Krark's resiliency can be really good, and sometimes variance is bad, and I don't know, maybe I could have done something else. I feel like I was like, even afterwards, he was like, you were really telling the table like how to pick me apart. I was like nervous there. And even after I did all that, it still didn't matter. So Krark is really good. Krark kind of feels like a mid-range hell breaker because it allows you to, in those convoluted games when everyone has a bunch of cards, if your counter spells can sometimes be double counter spells, like it can get kind of nutty really out of hand really
not
quick.
Not only that, but their spells can't always be countered right. either.
Because there's two of them, there's a copy.
They'll just go to hand, or sometimes you can't deal with both versions.
Right. That's the funniest thing about copying spells, is like suddenly it requires 2 counter spells to stop the effect, which is so weird.
Yeah, exactly. And then oftentimes you have to do things in like weird orders, like I don't want to have to kill this Krark because Magda's right there, but like if I don't kill the Krark, you win. If I do kill the Krark, then Magda wins right afterwards. So you get put in these positions of like, you have to communicate with the table. Who else has got interaction? You know what I mean? I don't want to use this here, but we got it. So
it's the weirdest thing about Krark is that sometimes it feels like Wandering Archaic of all things.
Yeah, I guess that kind of makes it, you just get an extra copy of everything.
But for yourself.
Yeah. So yeah, I lost. So I'm out. That's it for me. I'm kaput. But Tyler gets to go to top 16 probably. So great for him. Good for him.
I don't know about probably.
Oh, sorry. I meant the Tyler that I lost to right now. But maybe.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about what happened.
Yeah.
Because you did get into top 16.
I did. I could not believe it. I was exactly in 16th place. I was the bubble. I was the last one to make it based on my breakers. And this makes sense to the narrative of my life, though, and I want to explain why. The dinner that everyone was going to for my roommate's birthday that I mentioned, other Tyler.
Which is funny, that's a third Tyler.
Yeah.
That Tyler's name is Other Tyler. Tyler. We call him OT or Other Tyler.
First name Other, last name Tyler.
And he hates CEDH. Oh my god. He loves real life shit posting, so he decided for his birthday what we're going to do is put on suits and go to Olive Garden, which is...
its own thing.
I don't really fuck with chain restaurants, so I was kind of dreading this, but I love him and I would do this for him, so like, you know, I'm like prepared for it. But in an act of a god that I don't believe in, I barely make the bubble so that I am not going to be able to go to Olive Garden, and I'm like, sorry, made semifinals. I don't know what to tell you. I'll meet up with you after for drinks. Yeah.
Damn, I should have just gone to Olive Garden.
Dude, we should have gone in your place. Yeah, that would have been so funny.
Yeah.
How did your semifinals round go?
Sure. So
this is around 8:30 that we're starting semifinals. Just a heads up. That's where we're at right now. Semifinals, 8:25, 8:20, 8:30, somewhere around there is when they start.
Oh, no, wait. I just had it up precisely. Give me one second. Because John Vafnar did actually... like figure out when they started and ended. Give me 1 second.
I know. I just said one.
Yeah, it was like around 8:30. Yeah.
8:25 exactly.
5 exactly.
I'm cutting that. Order. So thanks for wasting our time.
Fine.
Thanks for wasting our time.
I'm sorry. Jeez.
That's so funny.
All right, Cam.
Semifinals. We're all Tyler's made it again. I go up to Tyler and I go, Losers Club. And he goes, nope, I made it. I'm like, you fucker. And then I go eat for the first time that
My
day after that.
My favorite part was that after you lost your second round, I said, oh, hey, well, thanks for playing bad for us today. Now everyone else has a chance.
Nope.
And now here you are in the top 16. That's awesome.
Yep.
So we're at top 16. We've made it to the top 16. Cam and I didn't make it to top 16. But Tyler did. Here is your top 16.
By we just mean the podcast.
The podcast. We've gotten there. We have Bryant on Tibnith Rast. Drew on Magda, Ryan on the Master of Keys, Hunter on Hashatan, Charles on Sisse, Jared on Silvala, Green White Silvala, the very same one I lost to, Jake on Derevi, Tyler on Karkin Sakashima, the very one that I lost to, Jim on Thrasios Timna, Kyle on Krom Timna, John on Redshift, Carmen on Loot, Ben on Malcolm Vile Smasher, Ben on Rograk Thrasios, Dalton on Oswald Fiddlebender, and Tyler on Kark and Timna. Oswald Fiddlebender made the top 16.
Also top four to our Convoke tournament. That was not long before that. And I think top 16 the previous play to win tournament too.
Yeah, Dalton has been on a tear with Oswald. This Oswald deck is nutty. I highly recommend go checking it out. It can win from, what, five mana and an activation or something silly?
So it depends on which artifacts you have in play. Two mana ones or one mana ones. But
I heard
that
this semifinal he won on turn two by going turn one Sol Ring into Marvin and then turn two Oswald win the game.
Yeah. So that's a sneak peek at how one of those semifinals run. It was 825. It started by 8:30. The game was over. Oswald won on turn two with that very line. So Oswald is not just a slow stacks deck. It can win on turn two in a very difficult to interact with way. I remember one of the players at that pod saying, I had mental misstep. I didn't think I needed to counter the Sol Ring. But alas, apparently you do. So that's our top 16.
How'd your game go,
Tyler? How'd your game go?
I was against Carmen, another one of our local players. She's playing Loot, though she usually plays Femboy Farm, so Loot was a new one here. Jake on Derevi, who I had played in an earlier round, and Jared on Parlay Savala. That was the Savala that we talked about.
Every time someone says Parlay, I think of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, that makes sense. I think of sports betting. Brain's been destroyed.
Gross.
I know. I don't even sports bet. That's what parlay makes me think of now.
I only know what a parlay is because I watched a video about how to hate sports betting, basically.
We're saying this wrong too, though. I think it's parley, not parlay, because parlay is a word that means something different.
No, parley.
And parlay are different.
No, like to parlay is to meet with a bunch of people. And
no, to parley is to meet with a bunch of people.
No, that's
parlay. To parlay is to convert something.
Are you talking about parlor, like a
No. Parlay is to like convert something like an advantage into something else. Like
betting.
Like I had some extra money and I was able to like parlay that into an investment.
That's what Savala is, parlay or parley?
I think it's parley.
Is it?
Wait. Well, I just Googled parlay and the first thing that came up was FanDuel, so now I'm a little confused.
That's what's using it as the form of, oh, I have extra money, let me put it all into here to try to up my odds.
This is parley, L-E-Y, not parlay, but parlay is the one that relates to betting and also...
This feels like it should be that, though, because you said parlay turns something into something else. That's what parlay is?
And this is turning a tap ability into cards and mana.
Yeah, what does parlay mean?
Parley is a spice.
It's like...
Mix like thyme and like parley.
But are you saying parley time, like the store, parley time?
Parley
they sell
time.
Balloons and
stuff. They just went out of business. Well, now that we know what these are.
This is why they didn't make some.
Will you tell us about your round?
That's true. What does parley mean? I actually do want to know. What does parley mean?
It's like a meeting. It's like a diplomatic term. Almost.
Okay, a diplomatic term.
That's
okay,
how Jack
okay.
Sparrow uses it. To
Can
parlay.
We call it Savala Explorer Return, since that's the name of the card? Maybe we just call it that instead of the parley bullshit?
Green, white, Savala. How about that?
That sounds much better.
Okay.
How did your Swiss go? Or your top 16 go?
So Carmen and Seat one on Loot, blasted to four mana on turn one with a Sol Ring Talisman turn, setting up a turn two Loot, which is like pretty good because Loot has haste. Jake played out a Dork, Savala played turn one Drannith, which I was really unhappy to see in seat four in a deck that really kind of needs both of the commanders for the plan, so I was feeling screwed. I played a turn one Sarah Ascendant, and then there was a slow turn because the Drannith had shut down the early Loot, and that was kind of Carmen's whole first play, and I played a turn two Lotho. Drannith was still holding everything down, keeping the game slow. Carmen played a Kinnan and started to be kind of on the slow activate Kinnan plan in a not Kinnan deck, which is like not where you want to be, but means she's at least like doing something advance under Drannith, which I kind of can't. At this point, I'm like thinking like I'm going to have to try and kill people with Sarah Ascendant, I guess. I don't know. I'm not doing anything. Derevi activated to get Derevi in play and was starting to do to threaten big mana stuff because there was a Fanatic of Ronus. There's a Mana Vault out. These are things that Derevi can untap. Jared at this point dropped a Vex. Vexing Bauble, or maybe it was the turn before, not sure. So going into the next turn, Carmen main phase flipped a Hallbreaker Horror, which is like, oh, now she can bounce things that are stopping her from winning. This is very alarming. So she tried to bounce Sol Ring, looking like it was going to be one of the infinite mana loops since Kinnan was out, but got shut down by a silence. On Jake's turn, she cast a Born Upon the Wind and started going for it again.
Yeah.
With a Derevi activation on the stack, a Derevi activation that looks like it might be able to win itself because there's a Fanatic of Ronus, and if Derevi untaps Fanatic of Ronus...
Derevi, like, activation from the command zone to put into play, or like a Derevi trigger?
Yeah, I think this was put into play, so we didn't know what it was targeting yet or how this was going to go. So she tries to go for it with the Born Upon a Wind. The Born Upon a Wind does resolve. Jake also had a Blind Obedience down, which was making my Lothos treasures come in tapped and, you know, stopping some other stuff. She also Boseju'd the Blind Obedience in order to be able to do the Hullbreaker line, because obviously otherwise you can't. So she removed two of these stacks pieces, and she taps down low enough that I'm able to get away with a Pyroblast targeting the Hullbreaker to shut down the win at that moment. Jake tried to go for it by birthing potting into Emile after Carmen got shut down on his turn. And from here, with Emile targeting Derevi for an activation, he was tapped down enough that this was the interaction point. So if Derevi enters at this point, it will untap Fanatic of Vronus, and Fanatic of Vronus makes 4 mana, which can activate Emile again. This is an infinite mana loop. But I have Saw in Half in my hand and enough treasures, because the Blind Obedience result was removed, enough treasures to cast Saw in Half. So I Saw in Half the Fanatic of Vronus, so it will no longer be able to tap for mana. It will be summoning sick. And that's enough to shut down the win attempt on Jake's turn. So I'm like, whew, like 3 win attempts in a row. I can't believe we're even still alive. So Vala casts an Allosaurus Shepherd. I'm looking at my hand thinking, I'm not sure I can win, but if I don't try and do something to stop Draenith from coming back down, I'm almost sure Draenith is coming back down, the one that Carmen had just bounced. I respond to the Allosaurus Shepherd by casting a Silence, because I don't want more Stax pieces to come down that are going to stop me from doing anything. And with an Allosaurus Shepherd, like, I can't stop any Stax pieces, so I was kind of freaked out. And that Silence did resolve, which kind of made me think maybe the table is sort of out of interaction. So on my turn, I was able to Demonic Tutor for Harmonic Prodigy and start popping off from there, Harmonic Prodigy being one of the best doublers for Quark because it's so cheap. I got a bunch of lucky Rite of Flame Quark flips where I both made one copy and bounced it to hand, which lets you just kind of ritual. And then I was able to get Stormkill Nurnus down, which starts making you like a lot of treasures. I eventually assembled a slow value victory with an Imp Seal drawing into a flexible tutor, using the Timna attack to draw off the top for the Imp Seal. And then that flexible tutor let me tutor up all the other stuff in my library I needed to win, and I got it.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't have.
Nice. I remember watching from a size, watching you destroy a Ronus, the mana dork. And I'm like, how is Tyler making these insane plays and still making it? But yeah, stopping the win is kind of relevant. You have to do that. That makes total sense.
Yeah, you sure do.
So you're making top four now. In top four.
It means I'm going to be in top four. Yeah. And that game wasn't that long. I think it maybe took us an hour. And so I'm like, all right, well, you know, it's like 9:30. We might get out at a reason. I'll at least be able to meet up for people with drinks after Olive Garden.
And then not the case.
Unfortunately, I didn't really know anything about your game because I spent most of the time looking at this other game that was still going on at that point that had every player had a Rhystic Study. It was
the game went on for 3 hours.
The game went on for 3 hours and 56 minutes.
Oh, wow. So it was a 4-hour game.
Just shy of the four-hour mark. Yeah. And it was wild. There was a lot of talking. There was a lot of pushing that players were trying to do while there were other Rhystic effects that were in play. And it was just a hell of stacks that people were getting into.
It got to one of those situations where everyone was just like responding to other shit on top of stuff. Eventually, the Rograkh Thrasios player won with Hullbreaker Horror, just winning over top of stuff. And I looked over quickly, and the Hullbreaker Horror is uncounterable. So he was able to flash that in, and it's in play. And then off of every, I'm going to cast Mox Amber, someone's going to counter that. In response to the counterspell, I'm going to flash in Mox Opal in response to that. I'm going to counter something, et cetera, et cetera. And all these counter spells just kind of get locked in the stack. And eventually he was able to create infinite mana with the Hullbreaker Horror and win with Thrasios.
I'm going to explain this just a little bit more because that's such a long time for a game to go. It's not just Rhystic Studies. Another important fact is that for a chunk of this game, there's also a Smothering Tithe in play. There are two players with Valley Flood Callers who also have Rhystic Studies. And the player who eventually won that had a Valley Flood Caller also had several tokens that were rats and birds and
Earthcraft
with both a forest and an island out. So that means that basically every single game action that's taken, every cast of a spell, whatever, is causing Rhystic City draws, which cause Smothering Tithe triggers. Everything that he casts is causing Valley Flood Caller to trigger and untap these tokens, which can tap for mana essentially with Earthcraft. So there's not only more gas being drawn, but there's more mana available over and over and over. There's just so much happening on the stack. Although these players, I think they were doing more talking than I would be comfortable with if I was trying to like get out of there. They weren't really being unreasonable. There was so much going on. There were so many triggers that they were playing at a almost reasonable pace.
Yeah, but it definitely did make me swing around to the, I think I'm on board with the Rhystic Study ban side now.
Yeah, interesting.
I never really want to advocate for a ban in really any situation because I love all the cards in Magic and I want to be able to play as many cards as I want. But like in the middle of the Swiss, it's not necessarily as big of an issue because we can just say, okay, we're going to draw the game because we have to end this turn. And maybe we'll even be able to say, hey, if you can't put a win together 10 minutes after the round's called, then it's a draw.
It's still a draw.
Yeah, it's still a draw because we have to move on with the day. But
in the semis, you need a winner. You
we
need
have
someone
to figure
to
out. Yeah, you can't draw into the top four and go, right. Well, there's six of us here now. Like, yeah. you can't do that. So you need to be able to find a winner. And I think that if there's a way we can make the general play environment better
yeah.
to make there not be consistent 4-hour games yeah. because like there were many other games throughout the day that could have gone on that long if time constraints weren't around. I talked to a lot of players that got 3 draws, 4 draws throughout the day. Like I said before, it's so hard to actually get wins in CEDH tournaments right now that like I think Rhystic Study like turning off the availability for like as many smothering tithe draws to happen, which means that there's less Valley Flood Caller triggers that happen. Like, it just means that there's...
Lowers the volume on everything.
Exactly.
Like, we have Mystic Remora, but Mystic Remora, you have to pay to keep it around. Players can play creatures to play around it. All the other ones, like the frog and all the different like options, are not off of all spells. Esper Sentinel is the first non-creature, so they're all much less. Rhystic Study is just by far and away the most powerful.
But we already talked about how when you pass priority and then everyone has to respond and talk about what's going on, how that takes up as much time. When there's also Rhystic Study triggers on top of all that people have to decide if they want to respond to. Do I want to let you draw? Like, it just adds 50 other decisions to every single turn that happens. I don't think I'm gonna tell Wizards or anyone right, that I yeah. know who's in the Commander Advisory Group, hey, you should look to ban Rhystic Study, but I will no longer be sad if that card goes away. And I think I would actively be happy if it did.
I think I'm kind of in the same boat. No, go ahead.
I see an argument for it, absolutely. I think my fear is that it feels to me at least possible that now that Wizards has taken control, that they maybe unban Jeweled Lotus. My fear is that if Rhystic Study is banned and Jeweled Lotus is unbanned in the same move, I don't think that will be good for the CEDH meta, because I think you make mid-range much worse and make very fast commanders and explosive like turn ones much better, and it just becomes possibly like a very fast format. But that's super speculative. I can't say that would happen.
I don't think that will happen,
but I hope that something like that kind of does happen, because I like CDH because it's a fast combo format. Like, not saying that I don't like this mid-range hell world now. I do like it, but what draws me to it is players winning on turn one or two. I think that's really fun. So I would really enjoy if we do make a push to make CDH quicker so that we aren't going to turns all the time. We aren't getting as many draws, and people do have the resources to push through turn one and two wins. I think that's neat. I know for a lot of competitive players that sucks because they want more agency in the game, but I got into
CEDH because it felt like Vintage Cube a lot of the times, and now it doesn't feel like Vintage Cube at all.
Yeah, it's much different now.
What I love is explosive turns, yeah. and what you're describing are explosive turns, but you can also have explosive turns way later in the game.
That's
very much out of the Timna Krark deck.
But like, that's like watching a movie for 2 hours to have one exciting thing happen at the end and then like have nothing else go on.
Well,
like,
it's still,
that's great. Like, if the story can still get me there, and if I'm in the mood for a story, that's fine. I'm not always in the mood for a 2-hour story, and now like I don't have the luxury of going, do you guys want to play a CEDH game, because it's the end of the night, we've been playing a bunch of casual and those games take really long. Like, I now can say I don't have time to play a game of CEDH when before that wasn't something I had to worry about.
Yeah,
you heard it here first. They love explosive turn one and turn two wins. They are both switching to Yu-Gi-Oh, leaving Magic behind. That's what the channel's about now.
I don't want to make it sound like I don't like where CEDH is right now.
Oh, me neither.
I actually do. I do like it a lot. I'm just noting that it's much different, and I do think eventually the draw problem will be an issue. I think a lot of tank games going much longer, I think eventually will be a little bit of annoying. I still like those games. I think they're really interesting. I think they're really fun. But overall, this tournament, we got out of there. Do we even get to our finals yet? We didn't even get to the finals
spot
yet. No, we
should talk about finals.
Like I said before, after midnight, we didn't get out of there until 2:45 in the morning. That kind of sucks. That's for a one-day tournament.
We got home at 2:45 in the morning.
Home at 2:45.
But there were other people that left at 1:40 in the morning and then had a 2-hour drive home, which was also twice as long as what we did. So
should we talk about our top four?
Speaking of going late, let's talk about your top four.
Do you have the time?
Started at 12:26 and ended at 1:37 a.m.
We have in the top four Malcolm Vilesmasher, Rograkh Thrasios, Oswald Fiddlebender, and Krark and Timna.
On this one, I actually didn't take notes for it, but I think I remember it pretty well. So we're just gonna go for it. I was in seat one. On seat two, we had Ben, who was playing Malcolm Vilesmasher. This is a Pirates deck.
This is the deck that I tried to stop the Necropotence and the Lively Dirge on my tournament a long time ago. This is that same player.
And then we had another Benjamin, on Rogue Thrash. That was the one that was stuck in the really long game. So poor guy had like 10 minutes between rounds and then had to just start playing again.
This was also in my player with the Marnius player and the Yawgmoth, I think. This player was also one of my rounds too.
And then in C4 we had Dalton on Oswald, who we've talked about a bunch of this podcast too.
I didn't play against any of these people all day.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I didn't play against Dalton.
Well, that's why your breakers.
Yeah. So how did this game go? You were in the play.
So I'm on the play. I kept a hand I'm not sure I should have kept, to be honest. It was going to be turn one, land Mox Amber, pass with the idea of casting Quark, then having some mana turn two, but it felt good enough for the pod, and I didn't want to go down too low. I think it was a six that I kept.
I remember seeing it. I remember thinking it wasn't a good hand. I overlooked it. It was like three lands, silence Mox Amber, and then some other spell that didn't, like, was like,
I
okay.
I think Ashling was already in the
maybe
hand.
Maybe Ashling or something like that. It felt like you could like cast a couple spells and that was sort of it, and like maybe just didn't want to go to five.
To me, it looked like Ashling was what was going to carry that hand.
Yeah.
I was thinking to myself, Oswald is very hard for me to deal with. There's a Rogthrass deck that plays a lot of dorks. I feel like Ashling is actually pretty good in this pod.
Yeah.
So maybe rather than go to five, I just accept a six that can maybe trigger Ashling on like turn three if I survive that long.
Hopefully,
do
get
some
it out,
timing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But then turn one, I drew Ragavan for turn, which with a Mox Amber in hand was actually pretty good and really accelerated my game plan. So turn one, Ragavan, Mox Amber is what I played. And then we had a Mystic Remora from first Ben, and then I think just a Mana Dork from second Ben. And then Dalton, I don't actually remember exactly what the Oswald's player turn looked like. I think it was just turn one Oswald, yeah?
No, it was turn one.
Urza Saga. You had made Saga. You made a fish pack. He said, Oswald right. said, I cannot feed this fish for
right.
two turns.
There was a fish. We made we kind of made a fish pack.
And I remember it was a little bit specific because Oswald said, I cannot feed this for two turns if you guys cannot feed it, and then you both said yes, we cannot feed it on our next turn,
which is wild because normally my deck like kind of has to feed, but I actually with Ragavan I'm like, maybe I can just cast my creatures,
get away with a Timna
and just,
or a Croc or whatever.
Like this might actually be good for me if I get to start the Timna plan, and everyone's gonna think like, oh, he's the one suffering the most from not feeding this Remora, when in fact like this is okay for the particular hand I have this time.
Yeah, and we found out later that Oswald did have a ton of mana in his hand and could have really exploded that turn and gave fish 1,000 cards, but just played Urza Saga and passed,
which I think really smart, actually.
For what Oswald is and what Oswald kind of needs to do, Oswald, I feel like it makes perfect sense because that deck just wants to explode when it's ready. It doesn't need to feed earlier stuff, right? So
I think that was a good deal that Dalton made there, yeah.
Yeah, so my next two turns are both under a fish and they're both pretty tame. I cast Timna, I cast Quark. I might have jammed another small creature too. I don't remember exactly, but I'm just drawing some cards with Timna and making treasures with Ragavan. And a fish comes down from the other Ben as well on Rogthrass. So I'm now under two fishes. And he casts a crop rotation. This is, I think, on everyone's turn three now. He casts a crop rotation, which is obviously going to get his Gaia's Cradle, and he has like three creatures in play, and that one gets Mental Misstepped. So I think Dalton sees the Mental Misstep coming out and says, maybe I just got to push now. Yeah. So with Oswald already down from the previous turn, Dalton untaps and tries to go for it. Jams Sol Ring, Mana Vault, like a bunch of mana rocks. Dalton had given me the chance to like look at the primer to remind myself of the lines before the game, because I asked, I was like, I don't really remember the lines.
Yeah.
And they were just like, hey, well, here's my primer. Like,
it actually ended up being helpful, I think, because there was a moment where you realize you're like, they need,
like, wait a minute.
Once a two drop comes into play and five mana, and then you were able to stop that time, right?
Yeah. Which, thank you. Like, a super like sportsmanship moment, you know what I mean? Like, just like a great like goodwill thing to do where it's like, I'm not going to make you go look at someone else's list and figure it out. Like, you know, it's information before the game.
Yeah, nice
move.
Just
look. Yeah. But anyway, Dalton pushed, went for a win, and it really looked like they had it, to be honest. At one point, I think I remember saying, they just need a two-mana artifact and we're done. And then they put Aether Sworn Canonist on the stack, and I'm like, that's a two-mana artifact. Yeah. We're fucking cooked. But Ben, number one, who's playing the Pirate deck, had a Force of Will. And so Force of Will that, and I'm going like, okay, well, I don't think I can jam a win here, which is unfortunate because this feels like the win after moment where you want to be able to jam a
Ben
win.
Ben had done nothing else, only the Mystic Remora, and just countered two spells at that point.
Yeah,
just kept it alive.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm looking at a Silence in my hand going like, that. This is where I would jam, but I'm just not sure I can. But I get to untap, and I'm thinking I'm at least going to maybe Silence and try and do the Ashling turn to wipe some of the creatures on the Rogthrass board, to put Oswald all in the back foot by actually killing Oswald. And I think Ben is going to be ahead then and in a winning position, which worries me, but I still think that's the best turn I'm going to be able to take. But I drew a Grand Abolisher, which is a little better than Silence just because it's harder to counter. So I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to cast this Grand Abolisher, which I do, and then try and put together this Ashling thing, and that'll be good. But let's just see what I draw off Timna first. And I go to Timna attacks, and I draw a Jiska's Will.
Yeah, I remember watching this thinking like, oh no, Tyler's like in a bad spot. He doesn't have much going on in his hand. The Grixis player just drew 1,000 cards. And when you draw Grand Abolisher for turn and Jiska's Will with Timna, I'm like, wait a minute, you fucker. I think you could like do. You could probably win now.
This doesn't quite clinch it. Jiska's Will is a very good card in Quark Timna, obviously. It's kind of one of the best Quark cards because it gives you both mana and additional gas.
Yeah.
If you get to resolve two of them. And since both of my opponents have Mystic Remoras and have drawn a bunch of cards, it's going to be for a lot of mana. So, like, you know, I'm probably going to be able to have no mana problems. if I can resolve it. Problem is I have a Krark out, but I don't have any of the trigger doublers. So I'm looking at like some raw flips, just hoping I get really lucky. But it's the finals. You're going to have to get lucky to win it anyway. Your opponents are not going to make like massive mistakes because they got to the finals pod. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I end up jamming the Jeskka's Will and winning that flip. I might have had to cast it twice. I don't actually remember.
I think you had to cast it a couple times. You had made some treasures at this point with like maybe you had the flipper, the Tavern Scoundrel at this point. Maybe
Dragon Man made treasures.
So you had enough to do it twice. Yeah. I remember you afterwards, you had like one treasure available after you had resolved to Jeskka's Will.
Yeah. And I think I did have a Mana Vault that turn, which helped. I think that was also a Tim Nindra. But anyway, so I do get to resolve a Jeskka's Will, which exiles a bunch of cards for me. And those cards include Angel's Grace, some other stuff. And I get to make all this red mana. So I deploy Aisling. And Aisling is going to help me a little bit in this regard because it will trigger every time I cast a spell or copy a spell, and part of that trigger is discard a card, then draw a card. So I'm going to be able to start digging through my deck a little bit. The problem is I'm only at like one card in hand, and Aisling makes that really weird because sometimes you don't want to discard that one card.
And you discard first. You discard first, right?
You discard first, then draw. It's rummage.
Ooh, yeah. And when did your Necropotence get into play?
I did cast a Necro. I think this was later because I think I cast a Necro after I cast a Final Fortune, which is something I drew into with...
I remember you cast a Necro before the Final Fortune, but you had cast like a Culling Ritual or maybe some other stuff because you need a black mana at the point that we're currently at to get to Necro.
Yeah, there was a Culling Ritual where I'm pretty sure I had to win the flip on that and did. I ended up putting a Necro down. I don't remember why in the moment, to be honest, or what I needed the Necro for at that moment.
I think it was the Final Fortune. You were going to try to just take an extra turn and see a couple extra cards with it.
Because I know that you had the Storm Kiln artist that you could follow all this up with too. So like you were going to have a million mana. You just needed a couple more cards to get yourself there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there was a point that I remember really clearly where I had another 50-50 moment where if I didn't have this flip go the right way, I was going to not be able to do it. I was going to lose the game. So I had a Final Fortune on top of my deck because I had tutored it with, I think, Imperial Seal. I don't know, a top deck tutor. I need to be able to draw it and cast it, but I can only do that by casting a spell to get the Aisling trigger to discard a card in hand and then draw this Final Fortune. But the only spell I can cast is the Angel's Grace that I hit off of the Jeskka's Will. And because Angel's Grace won't let me put anything else on the stack after it goes onto the stack, I have to cast Angel's Grace, have a Krark trigger, and then if I win that Krark trigger, I'm going to have two Aisling triggers, one from the cast, one from the copy, which will make me discard the Final Fortune and not be able to cast it because I can't put it on the stack. So I need to bounce the Angel's Grace, and thankfully I do. I get to cast a Final Fortune. I get to look at a ton of cards with Necropotence. I get to go into my next turn with a lot of treasures and a Final Fortune and access to tutors. And I was keeping, I don't think I was keeping an Underworld Breach, but I was keeping tutors from this big Necropotence hand.
I remember seeing you had Underworld Breach saw in half, and then you had like a Roaming Throne and the Mana Maker. Like you had like your pieces to like effectively like make a billion and then like make five and then a billion of those things, right?
At this point, I'm extremely confident that I can win on the Final Fortune turn because Grand Abolisher is not only until end of turn, that's still going to protect my next turn too. So that was pretty nutty. So I untap, I sort of say at this point, like, hey, here's what I have. I'm going to go for a line similar to this. It is not deterministic. It could fail. It's very unlikely to fail at this point. We're in mathematical territory where a lot would have to go wrong, but it's the finals. And
yeah, it was actually kind of a funny moment because you're like, I know I win the game, but it'll be more clear in like 45 minutes when I can give it to you definitively.
More or less. I was like, if we want to do some shortcutting or, you know, whatever, like talk about conceding, we can do that now. And they're like, no, you know, it's the finals. You can mess up, so on and so forth. Totally fair. That's all true. So I'm like, all right, we'll talk about it in 45 minutes. And we do.
Yeah, it took 45 minutes. You were making game actions the whole time. Oh, yeah, you were going quick. In fact, you were missing triggers too. Like you were skipping stuff that like didn't matter after you had like make 8 treasures off of this thing, do it again, make 8 treasures, you would miss another one. Like, all right, I miss another one, make another 8 treasures, now I have 24, whoop-de-doo, right?
Doesn't Aisling also make your red mana not leave your mana pool too?
I should have actually had the red mana from the previous turn go into this turn. Because
you still had like 14 floating red mana that you couldn't do anything with that turn. You needed more cards.
It just didn't matter.
It
wasn't actually mana constrained.
Yeah. That was the funniest part, was that who gives a fuck about 14 free mana? Yeah.
But it didn't matter. You were able to make a billion mana and then just basically like copy your Roaming Throne over and over, right, or something
saw in half Orcish Bowmasters.
I got Harmonic Prodigies, I had Tavern Scoundrel, I started saw in halving the Tavern Scoundrel and the Harmonic Prodigy because by getting extra copies of those I get more Krark triggers and more Krark triggers and more Tavern Scoundrel triggers and more Tavern Scoundrel
and then
triggers.
Like every spell makes 15 treasures every time you cast a spell, if it goes to hand or if it goes to graveyard, doesn't matter.
I hit a point where it becomes clear that I'm going to run out of cards in my deck if I don't kill my own Aisling, so I had to do that. I tutor for Soul Partition to get rid of my own Aisling,
right.
which was ugly and weird. I also initially tried to go for a line that I thought was going to be fast to just try and close out the game and get it over with by casting Obama Masters and starting to wheel a fortune. but I forgot that I still had a Necropotence to play. So the wheel gets discarded, so it gets exiled, so I can't escape it with Underworld Breach, which was the plan. So I have to switch gears and play a different line. And this is what I get for trying to... Every time I try and make things faster, I end up making them slower because I make mistakes, and that absolutely happened.
But it was a great win, though.
But you still got it.
Eventually, I say, look... I have so many that I'm just going to be able to saw in half the Orcish Bowmasters until you're all dead. I will saw in half it 1 billion times, and there will be 1 billion Bowmasters.
Yeah, at the point where you have so many, like when you're flipping, you know, 10 times because of all your Roaming Thrones or whatever, there's like a pretty much guarantee that the saw in half is going to make back. And you also had the Underworld Breach there with the Necropotent Scott. So
if the saw in half even went to graveyard, I would still be able to escape.
You still get to do it again from your graveyard, and then if it bounces again, it goes back to your hands. So you don't have to escape again. You can do it again. So the odds of you losing were like less than a fraction of a fraction of a fraction at that point, and you would it would have taken you another like 3 hours, and the play it was like one in the morning. The players were good. Yeah. So nice. So you won. So that means next year you're gonna be on the playmat again for the 2026
with
Cloud
Clark
City
and
permit.
Timna with both Clark on and Timna. It too. Yeah.
I'm so sorry, everyone. This ugly mug.
Please, for our next tournament, come and beat Tyler so he's not on it three times.
If you end up looking at my Timna Clark deck list, which presumably is in the description below, I have not frozen one for the tournament. So I reference Aisling a lot. Immediately after this tournament, I cut Aisling. I said, I am fucking done with this card. It feels bad a lot of the time. I also cut Necropotence, which we also referenced. So if you're looking at my list going, were they cheating? No. I mean, yes, because Quark is basically cheating. But cut Aisling and put in Faithless Looting instead. Cut Necropotence, put in Tainted Pact instead. I haven't tested the changes out enough yet, but I am feeling good about them. So anyway, I'm still working on this list. If you have ideas, let me know in the comments.
Thanks so much for watching. If you want to support us directly, you can listen to Cam as he talks about all the ways to do so.
Thanks, Dylan. If you want to support us directly, you can do so at our Patreon, like our $100 patrons, David Newman, Pat Fires, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groupie, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Gare Bear Garrett, Luke Cook, Joshua Day, Demon of Rosgrees, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Goto 9, Kwaja A. Hamid, Lauren Connell, Scott Hawk, and Baby Jeebus. If you want to check out any of our merch, you can do so at our website, which is playtowinmtg.com. Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off. And you can check us out on social media, too. Everywhere you can find social media at PlayToWinMTG. So thanks so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Thageed, Lil Sad Loner, Ghost Stories, Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poti, Justin, Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
We're in the wrong reality. This is the wrong timeline. Something's off.